Hello and welcome to Plan Lehigh Valley. This WDIY program is presented along with our partners from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. And joining me today, as always, are our co-hosts, Becky Bradley, Executive Director of the Commission, and Managing Editor, Matt Assad.
Good evening.
So today's show is going to focus on the two-year effort to create the Lehigh Valley Housing Supply and Attainability Strategy, which is a groundbreaking plan to help erase the Lehigh Valley's more than 9,000 unit housing shortage. Today's guest is one of the region and state's foremost experts on housing planning and development, Jill Seitz. She is the Chief Regional and Community Planner at the Commission. In 2017, Jill joined the Planning Commission, where she leads initiatives that shape and manage the region's growth, sustainability, and quality of life. Jill is an expert on Pennsylvania planning, zoning, and land use, and has played a key role in projects that include developing Future LV, the regional plan, and the Lehigh County Emerging Land Use Guide. She's co-author of the Lehigh Valley Housing Supply and Attainability Strategy, bringing together hundreds of stakeholders across industries and sectors to create a business plan for increasing housing production and addressing the region's housing shortage. She has become a go-to on the public speaking set on the issues of housing and industrial land use. Thanks for being here today, Jill. So Matt, set the stage for this housing discussion. Tell us all about the strategy.
So anyone who has shopped for a house or an apartment over the last decade knows that prices have skyrocketed. You know, to buy a house in particular, since 2016, it has literally doubled in price. Anyone who's been out there sees that. So over the past couple of years, the LVPC, with the financial backing of Lehigh County, has been working with the community and industry partners to draft a plan that's designed to increase the supply, not only to build more homes, but a diverse variety of homes in places where people need them and at price points that they can sort of stay in their own neighborhoods. The Lehigh Valley Housing Supply and Attainability Strategy is truly a community-built plan because it serves as a roadmap to get us out of this shortage so prices can start coming down and our kids and grandkids can, you know, have the option of staying in the neighborhoods where they grew up. The goal is to promote a balanced housing market where people at every income level can find the housing they want. And it took us years to sort of get into this shortage. That's how you get 9,000 down. It took us more than a decade. So we know it's going to take a long time, and we know a lot of folks are going to have to be involved in every sector. But the plan is here, and we're going to start implementation almost as soon as it's released.
So this isn't the first time we've talked about housing on this show, but Becky, give us the background. How did we get here in this incredible housing shortage?
Well, the elevator speech is the population's been growing steadily for over 60 years. And then that pesky housing downturn in 2008 just led to an underproduction of housing units. While, you know, the regions, particularly the private sector, has done a pretty remarkable job over the last, you know, handful of years or so in increasing product onto the market, we're still behind because of that roughly 10-year period, give or take, where we had very low housing production and a simultaneous population and employment growth.
Okay, and did COVID have any impact on the housing market?
Why, yes, it did. And people were coming here anyway, but many, many, many people decided to come here in the 2020 timeframe, and then some of them stayed, and then more people started coming. So Matt, don't correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was over 6,000 people came just in a single year in 2020. I think it's higher than that, wasn't it?
I think it was more like 11. So it was much higher. It was
so big, double what I said.
Yeah, so it had a big jump, and you know, and it didn't like slow down. You would think the next year, okay, fewer people, but we didn't continue to get 11 every year, but we were back to the usual, which we've had for six decades, of 4,000 to 6,000. And that's still happening now, and there's no reason to believe it's going to change anytime before 2050, which is where our forecasts go.
Another thing, too, I think is really interesting. Jill and I had the opportunity to talk to the city of Allentown here recently And they were talking to us because they've been working really diligently on housing issues inside the city. And they were talking to us about, too, there's a lot of outside investors that are coming in and buying up, ownership properties. And, some are fixing them up and flipping them, some are turning them to rentals. And so those folks may not necessarily live here either. So there's like some complex issues that also factor into the number, the availability of units as well.
Now, this plan, it's taken 2 years to put this together. Who contributed to creating it?
Who didn't is the better way to answer that. And that's why we were slow and very deliberate about it, because we needed to engage with all the local governments, with both counties, with the housing authorities, with the nonprofit housing sector, with developers and builders and banks and other forms of financial institutions, school districts, higher education. We really opened the table to anyone who wanted to join it. To work on this compound complex issue of our residential deficit and how we were going to get out of it.
Now, many people assume the shortage only affects low-income households, but your data is not showing that. Who is struggling to find housing? Give us a picture of the folks who are needing housing.
Well, basically everyone. I'll give you an example, and then I'll kick it over to Jill, who has, dozens of more. But for example, if you're in the house that you first purchased 15, 20 years ago, and you have a family, and you that house is too small for you now, and you want to get a house with an additional bedroom, let's say. There's not really a whole lot of product for you to purchase at all. And so there's a lot of people competing for, a handful of units. So people are kind of stuck in the housing that they have today. And that, goes back to the conversation of like when we're younger and we're older, we need different types of housing. Throughout our life cycle, what we need now is going to probably vary in 10, 20, how based on how old you are, years. So maybe you don't want to mow a lawn anymore or take care of a 3,000 square foot house or even a 2,000 square foot house as you are into retirement. Well, what are your options? You don't have a whole lot. So at the end of the day, housing affects everybody. And I know Jill can talk a lot more about the affordability components as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're increasingly hearing from all different household and family sizes, and it doesn't even matter what occupation you have, whether you're a lower income earner or even high income earners. We're hearing from teachers, nurses, young professionals, families that have two incomes. Basically, anybody these days really has a story of their housing challenges or can talk about somebody in their family that they're struggling to find housing for, whether it may be their aging parents or grandparents. And so, housing is already a universal issue because everybody needs housing, but we're definitely hearing now from really everybody that they're struggling to find housing that suits their needs in the right locations and at that right price point.
Okay, so Jill, one of the more surprising findings is that the biggest future shortage won't be in the cities, it will be in the suburbs. Why is that happening?
Well, our suburbs are the fastest growing communities in our region, and that is for a number of reasons. They are highly desirable. Many suburban communities are also much more heavily concentrated in one particular type of housing. Usually it's single family detached housing types. And so that really limits the number of housing opportunities that there are and how many needs that that particular type suits. And at the same time, our suburbs are also a significant share of the region's future household growth, which is expected within those suburban areas. So if you kind of compare that character and trend to our region cities, who certainly have their own significant housing challenges, but the cities also do tend to have that greater diversity of housing already, a greater mix of apartments and row homes, twins, and then different sized houses. It could be smaller homes. So, really, between that diversity and limited housing supply, we really see our suburban communities working to address what we would call a housing mismatch. So, there's growing demand from young adults and smaller households, as well as older residents who maybe would like to downsize. There's workers who want to live closer to where they work. But there's a relatively limited housing diversity that can accommodate all of that demand and interest that the suburban areas are seeing. And so, as those suburban communities continue to grow, addressing those housing needs becomes increasingly important. And so, the challenge is not simply building more housing units, it's also making sure that housing supply and character evolves to meet the needs of everybody that wants to live in the community.
So there's also another interesting finding here, and that is 20% increase in multi-generational households since 2010. Is that primarily a cultural shift, or are housing costs forcing families to live together longer?
It's really both. I mean, for many families, living with multiple generations is a cultural preference, something that they really actively value. It can also provide services within your household that you don't need to seek elsewhere, like childcare, support for older family members, and stronger family connections. But economics are also definitely a clear part of that picture as well. With rents rising and home prices rising, and there being fewer housing units available to meet the demand that we're seeing, it really becomes harder for young adults to establish their own households. It's harder for older adults to find suitable places to downsize. And so it is now much more normal for us to hear about young professionals choosing to live at home for longer with their parents if they're able to. Or seek cohabitation living situations with other adults to kind of share in the costs of rent and living. What we think really matters from a planning perspective is to make sure that we have a healthy housing market with that supply available in a wide range of areas in order to allow those different housing situations to make that choice intentionally for themselves and not necessarily be in a situation based on the economics or unit availability to basically be forced to cohabitate.
Yeah, and I think another thing too is people have a, especially if you're Gen X, you've got aging parents, right? And so another thing that we're seeing a lot of is elderly parents moving in with their children in order to avoid high rent cost and or be able to provide some level of care and support as it becomes harder and harder for an elderly parent or parents to do day-to-day tasks. So we're seeing a lot more multi-generational situations, partially out of need, but definitely fueled by costs being so high, especially with retirement and elder care facilities being, $10,000 a month and up.
And you hear realtors talk about all the time how the market is kind of stalled. Everybody's kind of sitting in place because there's too many 3% mortgages and nobody wants to get out of that. So you don't move when you would normally move.
Sure.
But to get a mortgage now, it's 7%. So
It's just a little less than
it's a
that, but
little less. Okay.
yeah, I mean they're getting them in the sixes if
Okay.
you've got good credit, but that gets back to like if you're trying to establish credit, you're going to have a higher rate too.
Yeah, gone are the days when your kid would graduate from college and you would think, okay, they're just going to go get an apartment or a house.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like if a one bedroom is $1,800 a month, I mean, my gosh, that's more than a lot of people's mortgages on a 1,900 square foot house, right? Which is, three bedroom, two and a half bath in general.
Yeah, crazy times.
It is.
Jill, while you were preparing this report, what were some of the things you heard in the community?
Well, one thing that became really apparent is that the housing challenge looks different in different communities across the region, depending on their character. Our region is very diverse. We have dense downtown cores in our urban cities, as well as boroughs. We also have suburban communities, rural communities, and also what planners call exurban communities, which is kind of that in between of a rural and a suburban community where a community is seeing some incremental growth, could maybe start even seeing some suburban character in a lot of areas, but has also been constrained by limited infrastructure, whether it's utility or roadways, that kind of makes that accommodating growth pattern difficult. And so another major theme we've heard through this process is the importance of making sure that we're investing in and supporting that infrastructure as we're looking at these growth areas and where housing can go. We know that housing can't be created in its own silo. We don't want to create housing and really places for people to live at the expense of other quality of life needs that they have, like making sure that the sewer system is acceptable and able to accommodate different housing densities. Many of our rural communities really value and prioritize farmland and open space. That's consistently what we hear is the number one attracting factor and draw for the region. And so if you hear housing development, or if you see housing development kind of take a lower density approach in many areas, that could result in a loss of that valued open space. And so really making sure that communities are evaluating their housing needs against all of these other planning priorities to make sure that our housing needs are being accommodated in the best way.
Okay, so Becky, the report talks about expanding housing choices from manufactured and modular homes to townhomes, apartments, and accessory dwelling units. I'm not sure I know what that means, but tell me why diversity of housing is so important.
Well, there's a lot of reasons diversity of housing is important. We talked to some of them about how already about how your needs throughout your life may change, and so you may need more space, less space, so on and so forth. But another component of that is utilities, and that gets back to the form and how dense you can do housing. So you're not going to have something at the scale and density of a city of Bethlehem or a city of Allentown. Or a lower Macungie Township or a Bethlehem Township or a city of Easton without public sewer and water. You need that because you can't have tons and tons and tons of on-lot septic systems at that density without risking or basically ensuring that you'll have well contamination into your drinking water, right? So you need some sort of, more people, more stuff, right? It's basically more is more. Is the simplest way to say it. So, depending on the density of community and the utility availability and what utilities have been are there now, what how they've been planned to expand or not will determine how much you can put there of not just housing, but businesses and other uses as well. Ways to increase housing without, let's say, having to, build an entirely new sewer plant in a rural area, or in a rural area where you don't even have a sewer plant, you're on lot well and septic, is you could do with like what Heidelberg Township did in Northwest Lehigh County. They allowed accessory dwelling units. So what's an ADU? An ADU is an additional residential unit. So it's what people call like mother-in-law apartments or mother-in-law suites commonly, but more than your mother-in-law could stay there. Your kid could stay there. You could live there as you age, and your kids could, your kid could have the house while they raise a family. And so there's ways to regulate for that without blowing up the utility infrastructure that you need at the scale and density of your community or portions of your community. You can add them into suburban communities where you have larger lots. There are places like all over California, and now I'm not saying we need to be California, but you see them all over there where they might have had a like a backyard shed or a pool building that they also have as like a small apartment. So there's examples all around the country. They're more common in places like California than they necessarily are here, but they're opportunities for us to be able to add density. The Alley House program, City of Bethlehem has, is another example of that. So we do have some now, but we could continue to encourage infill in new and interesting ways, even on existing residential lots.
That's interesting. So, Jill, the plan also recommends accelerating development reviews. How can communities speed up these approvals while ensuring that the quality is still there?
Sure. And through the process of developing the housing strategy, we've heard so many different ideas and approaches and potential solutions to kind of come at this problem from all angles. And the development review and approval process locally is just kind of one lever or mechanism that really impacts what housing can be built, where it can go, and then also ultimately what the cost of those units are once it kind of makes its way all the way through that regulatory process. We heard from private sector developers that the length of navigating the local review and approval process can have a cost impact on the ultimate unit prices because, you know, time is money. And if they need to resubmit so many times to a municipality in order to get their applications right, or if, you know, conditions change, then we're talking about more engineering or architectural review by design professionals, which really kind of contributes to that ultimate project cost. On the municipal side, it's worth looking into ways to kind of make that process as easy to navigate as possible. You know, making sure that municipalities do have very clear procedures and requirements for these plans to meet. And then also working with the local applicants to make sure that those provisions are understood, because we know that oftentimes for municipalities, you know, they're bound by the timing and requirements already established in their local regulations. And so sometimes it could just be an applicant's misunderstanding or not being fully clear on what those provisions are that can also kind of be a self-caused issue in navigating the process as well. So between the developer's side and the municipal side, there's one opportunity to kind of address the time it takes to have a concept for a project that somebody wants to do and then move through that process to get to the point of building those units and bringing them online a little bit quicker.
So, Jill, do you have any other key recommendations from this study that you would like to share?
Oh my gosh, there are so many to share. I guess one thing I would emphasize about the strategy is that it intentionally doesn't put all the responsibility on any one group. You know, we had hundreds of participants across industries and sectors, and really everybody has a role to play in addressing these housing issues. We know that the housing crisis won't be solved if all of us just kind of keep continuing to do what we have been doing. Progress is being made, but because we're making up for a deficit of units now, and then also facing continued population growth and demand moving over the next several decades, we really need to make sure that we're taking a really intentional and coordinated approach in order to prevent the gap between what housing is available and what people need to prevent that gap from spreading moving forward. So we really wanted to make sure that there was something for everybody in that plan. We know that communities are looking at how to expand the range of housing types that can be built, whether that's in different forms from single family detached to twins and townhouses and apartments. But that also means looking at some more modern or creative construction methods as well. I think one strategy that a lot of people are really excited about is using pre-manufactured or modular housing construction to kind of approach building units in a new way. There's also 3D printing, and we've seen more and more communities use recycled materials like shipping containers for housing, just kind of taking some different approaches to bring units online compared to a traditional stick-built approach. We know that we need some new creative financing tools to make a project feasible, financially feasible from the beginning in order to make sure that those projects actually can be developed long term. There's several different opportunities for a higher level of collaboration across the region to do that, whether it's between the two counties and LVPC, as well as redevelopment authorities at the county and local level. We have so many community organizations doing really great work in the housing space. And so a lot of the recommendations kind of look at how we can bring all of those efforts together to be really intentional and make a bigger impact.
So, Becky, how will we know if we're making progress here? I imagine there's benchmarks in this plan.
Oh, yes. And this is one of the really, really cool parts of this whole thing is because the one thing that nobody wanted was for us to release this, groundbreaking plan with this groundbreaking analysis to figure out what the housing market is and what we're short and what we need. And then it gathered dust. And so, as part of our newly revised data dashboard, Clay Carnes, our GIS planner, along with Jill Seitz, and I think Jacob Weinberg helped out with this too, have developed like tracking mechanisms. So as communities approve housing units, we can then update the data. As the census releases part of the analytics behind this, it can plug in so we can see to the dashboard so we can see progress. And on top of that, we are committed to doing an implementation partnership, and we're figuring out the details of that, but it will be open to folks who want to be a part of a series of housing solutions. And you can just check our website at lvpc.org, look under the housing tab, and for anything called Workshop LV Housing. Because that's how we brand our implementation groups as Workshop LV. But we know there will be many coming up. September 14th, we're doing an all community one where we're going to be talking about what implementation could look like. And that's after we meet with the local governments earlier that day. So a lot of good energy around the housing solution and some tracking that's going to come along with it. And you'll hear a lot more about what's being done and highlights of the projects and the folks that are working hard on this as we move through the next, several years and really hyper focus on increasing the number of units.
And if you like data, you could go into that data dashboard and lose an afternoon.
Lose an afternoon and become more knowledgeable on the region's housing needs and what we're going to do to solve it.
You go. All right, so let's wrap up here with just a final question. What does success look like in 10 years from now if we carry out this strategy?
I think in a really practical sense, it won't necessarily mean that housing will suddenly become inexpensive or that any community would look drastically different. Success would really look like a young adult who grew up here in the region has a realistic opportunity to establish a household here. They don't have to look to neighboring counties or regions for housing that may be more affordable and then commute into the region. It would mean that a teacher could find a home within a reasonable distance from their job, or an older resident could downsize without having to leave the community that they've really lived in for a long time and called home and established roots in. Successful housing implementation would also mean that developers have a clearer path to build good projects that meet local comprehensive plans, serve the community's needs here. Constructing really a variety of home types, different forms, and also sizes to meet all of those different needs that all of us have, whether it's by preference or through different life stages.
All right. Well, can't wait to see what happens here. That's all we have time for today. As always, you've been listening to Plan Lehigh Valley on WDIY with my co-hosts Becky Bradley and Matt Assad from the Planning Commission, also joined this week by Jill Seitz. You can always listen again at our website at wdiy.org or any podcast platform. Till next time, thanks so much.